This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. America's top diplomat is headed back to the Middle East amid fears the Israel-Hamas war could spiral into a bigger regional conflict. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Immediately after the war began, the Biden administration was relieved about what seemed to be the low potential for a broader Mideast battle. Since then, there have been attacks and assassinations in the Red Sea, Lebanon, Iran, Iraq. So Secretary of State Antony Blinken leaves this weekend for a fourth Mideast visit since the war began 2.5 months ago, with stops from Israel, the West Bank, Turkey, and other nations.
We don't expect every conversation on this trip to be easy.
Spokesman Matthew Miller says the region's facing both tough issues and choices as the U.S. seeks to avoid a bigger war. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
The U.S. military carried out a retaliatory strike in Baghdad on Thursday that killed a militia leader it blames for recent attacks on U.S. personnel. Here's Major General Pat Ryder.
And finally, I can confirm that on January 4 at approximately 12 p.m. Iraq time, U.S. forces took necessary and proportionate action against Mushtaq Jawad Kazim al-Jawari, a.k.a. Abu Taqwa, who is a Harakat al-Najuba leader. Abu Taqwa was actively involved in planning and carrying out attacks against American personnel.
Police and militia sources said the rockets hit a vehicle inside the Najuba's headquarters and killed four people, including a local group commander and one of his aides. Health sources confirmed the death toll. The U.S. military has come under attack at least 100 times in Iraq and Syria since the Israel-Hamas war began in October, usually with a mix of rockets and one-way attack drones. You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events 24 hours a day at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Global economic growth is projected to slow from an estimated 2.7% in 2023 to 2.4% in 2024, trending below the pre-pandemic growth rate of 3%, according to the United Nations World Economic Situation and Prospects 2024 report. VOA's Kim Lewis reports.
At the launch of the report today, Hantanu Mukherjee, director of the Economic Analysis and Policy Division, said there is a need for more investments to resuscitate growth, fight climate change, and accelerate progress towards the Sustainable Development Goals.
Across the world, inflation is expected to be at an average of 3.9% in 2024.
This latest forecast comes on the heels of global economic performance exceeding expectations in 2023. However, last year's stronger-than-expected GDP growth masked short-term risk and structural vulnerabilities. Kim Lewis, VOA News.
Two trains have collided on Indonesia's main island of Java, causing several carriages to buckle and overturn and killing at least three people. Officials say the accident happened near a train station in West Java's Bandung City. They say a train traveling from Surabaya, the capital of East Java province, hit a commuter train heading from the station. Police say at least three people were killed and several others were injured. Television video showed several carriages overturned or badly mangled and ambulances evacuating the injured. Train accidents are common on Indonesia's aging railroad network, especially at crossings. A terminally ill Connecticut woman has ended her life on her own terms in Vermont. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Linda Bluestein pushed for expanded access to Vermont's law that allows people who are terminally ill to receive lethal medication to end their lives in Vermont. The group Compassion and Choices filed a suit on Bluestein's behalf, challenging Vermont's residency requirement for assisted suicide. The state agreed to settle, allowing Bluestein, a Connecticut resident, to die in Vermont. Paul Bluestein called Linda's passing comfortable and peaceful, just like she wanted. Bluestein, who had terminal cancer, ended her life by taking prescribed medication. She expressed her happiness at ending her suffering. I'm Norman Hall.
Sudanese paramilitary leader General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo says he is committed to a ceasefire to end the devastating war that has wrecked his country. But fighting continues, and there has been no progress on proposed peace talks between Dagalo and Sudan Military Chief General Abdel Fattah Burhan. Dagalo, the leader of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, said after a meeting with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa in Pretoria on Thursday that his forces had in, quote, unwavering commitment to cease hostilities. He didn't say if or when he would meet with Burhan after the warring generals agreed last month to a face-to-face meeting. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, January 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan President Museveni slams what he calls Western imperialism after Uganda was removed from U.S. AGOA program.
If you value freedom, then you should value the freedom of everybody. If you value independence, if you value dignity, then you must respect the dignity of everybody. Stop manipulations and lectures to the societies that are different from yours.
Kenya's president comes under attack for criticizing the judiciary. Malawi civil servants snub a 15% salary increase. Sudan's RSF leader undertakes a shuttle diplomacy. Sierra Leone's information minister says he has no knowledge about an asylum arrangement for former President Bai Koroma.
We do not have any public communique, progress on any conversations between Sierra Leone and ECOWAS yet. So when we do that, you know, always I will convey that to you.
And returning migrants help fight irregular migration from the Gambia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Days after being removed from a U.S. economic assistance program due to human rights concerns, Uganda is criticizing the West. In a speech on Thursday, President Yoweri Museveni urged lawmakers from Commonwealth countries to reject what he calls the evil tendencies of Western countries towards societies that are different from them. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Addressing 33 parliament speakers from countries in the International Commonwealth bloc, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni urged them to ensure there is an end to what he called the oppression of man by fellow men. He said the oppression takes the form of aggression, looting, enslavement, displacement, ethnic cleansing, colonization, and indirect domination without occupying one's territory.
If you want freedom, if you value freedom, then you should value the freedom of everybody. If you value independence, if you value dignity, then you must respect the dignity of everybody. Stop manipulations and lectures to the societies that are different from yours.
Museveni said some countries have used technological progress to hold down other countries that have different values.
Instead of using this human progress for the benefit of all, some actors, out of greed and philosophical, ideological and strategic shallowness, miscalculate and seek to monopolize knowledge and also use knowledge to oppress others.
Since Ugandan lawmakers passed an anti-homosexuality law in May 2023, the East African country has come under pressure for what has been called abuse of human rights. That includes the withdrawal of funding by the World Bank and just this week being removed from the list of countries eligible for the U.S. African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Through that program, some countries in sub-Saharan Africa, including Uganda, had duty-free access to the U.S. market for close to 6,000 products. Member of Parliament, Asman Basalirwa, who introduced the anti-gay legislation that has been described as the world's harshest law against the LGBT community, says he is not surprised that Uganda is facing those consequences.
I'm really disappointed about their preferential treatment of rights. And that makes them lose the moral authority to attack the country over the anti-homosexuality. Be that as it may, nobody should tell you that the country will not suffer as a result of closure of AGOA.
Uganda's earnings through AGOA grew from $4 million to about $8 million in the 12 months up to June 2023. Museveni said Uganda could still take advantage of its access to the 2.4 billion people who live in the Commonwealth, made up mostly of former British colonies, to grow its economy. Basalirwa says Uganda now needs to find paths to markets in East Asia and focus on value addition so its products can get a foothold in the U.S. market. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Kenyan President William Ruto is coming under criticism from judges, lawyers, legal experts, and opposition groups after saying he would not respect court orders that he perceives as efforts to undermine key policies of his administration. Critics are calling for nationwide protests to protect the judiciary's independence and respect for the rule of law. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Kenyan lawyers have called for a demonstration following Tuesday's comment from President William Ruto. The head of the Law Society of Kenya, Eric Theuri, said they will be marching in support of Kenya's judges.
The Law Society would be organizing a countrywide peaceful demonstrations where we will read and affirm the oath that each and every one of the advocates of the High Court of Kenya took to protect the rule of law, the independence of the judiciary and the constitution that we have.
The Lawyers Association has called on each of its members to wear a purple ribbon next week to show their displeasure with the attack on the country's judicial system. On Tuesday, President Ruto said he will ignore some court orders that he sees as aimed at stalling government development programs. He accused some judges of corruption and working with those filing cases against his government's economic plans.
We will protect the independence of the judiciary. What we will not allow is judicial tyranny and judicial impunity.
The government led by Ruto has made the construction of affordable houses and provision of universal health care two of its top priorities. But critics say in implementing the plans, the government is trampling over the legal process. A Kenyan court stopped the government's plan to raise taxes to construct the houses, saying it was unconstitutional and discriminatory, a decision that has angered the executive. In a statement, Kenyan Chief Justice Martha Koome condemned the president's remarks on matters that are still before the court. Koome called on judges to fulfill their duties in accordance with the law and the constitution. She said the Judicial Service Commission will protect the targeted judges. Theuri said Ruto must use judicial means to challenge the court rulings and judicial officers if things are corrupt.
The president, therefore, as the foremost custodian of the rule of law, should refrain from undermining the judiciary and instead utilize legal avenues at his disposal to challenge decisions.
Kenya has a history of political violence and ethnic conflict, especially during election campaigns. The constitution passed in 2010 gave the judiciary independence to do its work without the interference of the government, a freedom which has given Kenyans increased confidence in the judiciary. Donald Rabala is an advocate at the High Court of Kenya. He told VOA that when the citizens are aggrieved and laws are broken, their hopes lie in courts, and it is good for the nation's stability.
It is also important for the common people, for those who are being governed. As you are aware, the constitution is basically a social contract between the governed and the governors. So what we are saying is that that is the only way the common man can be able to challenge any decision by the executive. They cannot challenge it through a compromise parliament. They cannot challenge it through the executive itself. But through the judiciary, they can't question any decision made by the executive. So, of course, with that, then you have the prosperity in place.
Despite the criticism, the government has vowed to crack down on allegedly corrupt judges and judicial officers. Many Kenyans hope any future action does not affect people's confidence in the country's judicial system, which has taken decades to build. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
The government of Malawi has announced a 15% salary increase for the country's civil servants. The move aims to address financial challenges facing its workers after the government devalued the local currency by 44%, resulting in price hikes of commodities and services. However, some workers' unions have snubbed the salary hike, saying it is too little and are demanding an average of around 40%. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Mavuto Kaonga is the Vice Secretary General for the Civil Servants Trade Union in Malawi. He told VOA that the salary increment follows an agreement the union made with the government negotiating team in December. They agreed that the new salary increase would take effect as of last November.
This month of January, we expect the all civil servants to get their increment for January and the arrears for 2 months. But at the same time, we also agreed to start working on the salary restructuring, which will be effective in April.
Kaonga said the increment aims to address financial challenges resulting from the 44% devaluation of the local currency, resulting in price hikes of commodities and services. However, the 15% increase is below the 40% salary increment the Civil Servants Trade Union had earlier asked for. Shout Smeza is the president for the National Organization of Nurses and midwives of Malawi. He says health workers as essential service providers deserve special treatment and better salaries.
From the essential service point of view, the 15% is by far nothing at all. Because as we are speaking now, the rest of the civil service was on holidays. But the essentials were on duty. As we are speaking now, nurses, midwives, clinicians are in the corridors of the hospitals and in the wards taking care of the Malawians.
Also, the president of Physicians Assistance Union of Malawi, Solomon Chomba, told a local daily newspaper Thursday that they would not accept a 15% increase unless their monthly professional allowance is increased from about $2 to $27. However, Kawonga of Civil Servants Trade Union said he could not comment on the concerns of health workers' unions, saying their grievances are handled by their line ministry. However, Smeza of the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives said the health workers would soon hold a meeting on matters with government authorities, which the Malawi Human Rights Commission is expected to mediate. Michael Kayata is the executive director for Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation in Malawi.
This is an insult to civil servants because the 15% is too little when you compare with the devolution that was effected in November. What it means is that the civil servants will still not be able to meet their basic needs because the cost of the basic goods and services has skyrocketed. It would have been better if the government had met the 40% demand. At least that would have made sense.
The chairperson for the government's negotiating teams on the salary increment, Charles Galimba, told local media that the pay rate of civil servants will rise as the country's economy improves. Representatives of the Civil Servants Trade Union said other negotiations on further salary increments would resume in April. For VOA English to Africa Service, I am Lamik Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, January 5th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Sierra Leone's information minister says he has no knowledge that the government has agreed for former President Ernest Bai Koroma to temporarily be relocated to Nigeria in exchange for dropping treason charges against him. Koroma was charged on Wednesday with treason and other offenses for his role in an alleged coup attempt in November. He has described the charges as politically motivated. The Nigeria online publication People's Gazette reported on Wednesday that the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, had brokered a deal for Koroma to be relocated to Nigeria. The report says Sierra Leone had agreed to drop all charges if the former president would leave the country. Information Minister Chona Ba tells me that former President Koroma remains under house arrest in Sierra Leone awaiting trial.
I did see the article, James. Unfortunately, I don't have any information on that. And I know that the former president is certainly here under house restrictions. And he has a case to answer in the courts of Spain.
It says here that ECOWAS secures asylum for former Sierra Leone President Bai Koroma in Nigeria.
Again, if such a thing will have happened, I think I will know in my incapacity. And I can tell you now that that has not happened.
There are some indication that your foreign minister has said that your government would not accept that.
Again, James, what I can tell you is that the ECOWAS mission was here. We issued a very public memo on the outcome of the conversation that happened. Since then, there's not been any updates. The former president is answering to a very specific set of charges. He was in court yesterday, back on the 17th. And the rest of the conversations with ECOWAS and other international parties, we have nothing to report.
When I spoke with you, I also spoke with one of the lawyers for the former president, who said that a man of the former president's stature can never be involved in any attempt to overthrow a government, indicating that these charges are all politically motivated.
Again, I think the lawyers of any clan will know that the place to make your case is not to the media, it will be in front of a court. We are seeking to avoid the kind of political commentary that some people are used to. Nobody's above the law. There's no provision in our law that says anybody's above the law. And at the same time, nobody's below the law. So nobody's targeted because of their position, but nobody's exempted. I think what would be really outrageous is that we said, oh, we have evidence of wrongdoing, but because of this person's position, we will spare them. That would be the terrible precedent. And I ask again, any good lawyer would be making their case in courts and not necessarily on social media.
So once again, did your government receive any request from ECOWAS?
As I've said, James, that once we have a position, a public communique to make clear our conversations with ECOWAS, we will do so. The last one was after their visit, and we made that very clear. They were here to condemn the coup, to commit their support to the government of Sierra Leone and to President of Sierra Leone, His Excellency President Julius Maada Bio, to also commit their support to our democracy and the actions that we have taken. We do not have any public communique progress on any conversations between Sierra Leone and ECOWAS yet to report. So when we do that, James, as you know, always, I will convey that to you.
Minister, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Always. Thank you.
John Aba is Sierra Leone's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. The Gambia's immigration department has launched a manhunt for immigration smugglers after an increase in the death toll of Gambians attempting to cross the Atlantic Ocean into Europe. Some returnees are now holding workshops to tell the truth about the dangers of trying to flee the country for greener pastures. Sinandu Tour reports from the capital, Banjul.
Soccer players with Kachikale United in Banjul say their last prayers for their teammates, Sherifu Sani, who goes by Amphal. Sani lost his life in October, attempting to cross the Atlantic Ocean to reach Europe. Sani, together with two other teammates and about 200 others, left the Gambia via a fishing boat to the coast of Spain. A family friend, Gerard Ju, says Sani was found lying dead after a routine boat cleaning exercise.
After 30 minutes of cleaning the water from the boat, then they came back, they met him lying. They tried to see if he's still breathing, but they found out that he was not breathing, and they performed this Muslim ritual before ritual prayers and stuff like this. And then from there, they pray for him, then they throw him in the sea.
Gambia's immigration department, the GID, told VOA that 2023 saw high numbers of people leaving the Gambia for Europe, and says some people died during the Atlantic crossing, but the government hasn't yet released an official death toll. Ibrahim Gassama lost about 5 friends in October. He says his country's declining economy is driving many young people to seek greener pastures.
The situation is getting harder in this country. That's why the people are, you know, moving in large numbers. Because this country, what we are told here is that, you know, focus on your education. After your education, you will get a good job, you know, so that you could take care of your family and stuff like that. Yeah, it is true that after education here, you might get a job. But the big question mark is that job for sufficient for you and your family?
Some who have taken the trip have returned. A group of returnees have joined the Youth Against Irregular Migrations, or YAIM, founded by young people who attempted to migrate to Europe. Now, they hope to fight against irregular migration by training young people with computer literacy skills. Lamin B. Bojan is a founding member. He is on a campaign to talk about his near-death experiences.
This journey is not an easy journey. After for us, the time we were living, nobody tell us what is on the way. We thought that, you know, it was just, you know, a silver plate. You just step on it and go. So then we decided to say, at least when we come back, we do advocacy, sensitize people, showing them that, you know, this is not the right channel, at least.
The GID says it has deployed resources to guard its coastline in a 24-hour surveillance and patrol exercise called Operation Zero Departures. They pledge to hand down smugglers profiting from irregular migration routes in the country. Sena Anutot for VOA, Banjul, The Gambia.
the key players in shuttle diplomacy aimed at ending the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces, the SAF, and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, are hoping to build on a deal reached Tuesday with the RSF. Former Sudanese ambassador to the United States, Noureddin Sati, is a member of the civilian coalition known as Tagadum. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke with Sati about the coalition and the upcoming steps in their conflict resolution efforts.
This has been a first step in the right direction. The plan is to engage with the two belligerents, to engage with the regional and international partners who are working for peace in Sudan, and to engage with other civic groups and political groups that are working for peace in Sudan, stopping the war and restoring democracy in Sudan. My assessment of the last moves that have been done in the last few days is that it's a very positive step in the right direction. Initially, we wrote letters, Takhadum wrote letters to both the RSF and the army, the SAF. And thus far, we have received only a response from the RSF. And that's the reason why we held that meeting with them. My colleagues held that meeting with them in Addis Ababa. A delegation, as you know, headed by Prime Minister Hamdok. So our assessment is that it is a positive step, a positive first step in the right direction, but it is not enough, of course. We need to engage the other belligerent, which is the Sudanese army.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, has announced a 40% increase in the prize money for the winner of the Africa Cup of Nations AFCON Cote d'Ivoire 2023. CAF said in its official website on Thursday that the winner of AFCON for 2023 will receive $7 million. It said the runner-up will now get $4 million, while each of the two semifinalists will receive $2.5 million, and each of the four quarterfinals list will get $1.3 million. The president of CAF, Petrus Motsepe, said CAF has made significant progress over the past 2 years in increasing the prize money of the AFCON and on all its other major competitions. Staying with football news, a French court has given Algerian football player Youssouf Attal an 8-month suspended prison sentence for a post he shared on social media about the war in Gaza. The Nice criminal court said a video Attal reposted on social media in October provoked hatred on the grounds of religion. It also ordered the footballer who plays for the Ligue 1 team Nice to pay a fine of $49,000 for posting an anti-Semitic video of preacher Mohamed El Hazanat on his Instagram account, which has over 3.2 million Instagram followers, 5 days after the October 7th start of the Israel-Gaza war. Attal has played 3 times for Algeria since the post and is set to future at the Cup of Nations, which begins on the 13th of January in Ivory Coast. In netball news, the Ugandan netball team, the She Cranes, are concluding their preparations for the prestigious Vitality Netball Nations Cup scheduled for the United Kingdom. The She Cranes will face up with 4 of the world's leading netball nations across the weekends of the 20th to the 21st and the 27th to the 28th of January 2024 as part of an incredible showcase of international netball. She Cranes were invited by England alongside powerhouses of Australia and New Zealand for the Netball Nations Cup. The team had nearly 4 weeks of immense preparations under the guidance of veteran coach Fred Mugrewa.
When we face such teams, we just take them as usual, like any other team. It's only that because they have that experience and they have good preparations. But I know with our girls, if they are determined, they can do something.
Finally, in table tennis news, Nigeria's table tennis player Aruna Quadri has exited the World Table Tennis Men's Finals in Doha following a 3-0 loss to world number one Zhendong Fan. The quarterfinals game at the Lucelle Sport Arena on Thursday saw the Chinese dominate the game. The Nigerian had earlier defeated world number five Brazil's Hugo Cardenio 3-2 in the round of 16 before facing Fan in the quarterfinals. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that is it for this Friday, January 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Porter in Washington.